You're listening to Radio Looks Lucid. I'm your host, Steve Matthews. Thanks for joining me for episode 108. And the title of this episode is, It's Primary Season. So, yeah, welcome to the program here today. I hope you all have been having a good weekend so far. It's kind of interesting here in Cincinnati. We've had some cold weather, kind of an Arctic blast, as a lot of the country has had here this past week. I guess they call that an Alberta Clipper. We had it was 4 degrees this morning when I got up. I went to an early Bible study, men's Bible study at my church, and it was 4 degrees when I left. It was I left a little bit after 7 o'clock this morning, and it was a cold one, no doubt about that. But you know, the good news is, we are officially almost a third of the way through winter. Winter began on December 21st. That's the winter solstice. That's the shortest day of the year. And you know what's interesting? Here in Cincinnati, we've gained close to half an hour of daylight since then. Because on December 21st, the sun set at, I guess it was 5:18 p.m. And now we've gained almost half an hour. We've gained almost a minute a day since then. And you can really start to tell a difference. You know, even at 6 o'clock now, there's still a little bit of, there's some light out there in the sky. So I like that. You know, things are getting warmer. You know, it's going to be spring training here in about, about 3 or 4 weeks. I think pitchers and catchers report the spring training. So I'm kind of pumped about that. Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, it's almost summer, right? Well, okay, maybe not quite. We did have a little bit of snow here the last few days. So, we're kind of in the, I guess statistically, this is the coldest part of the year. So, but we're getting through it. And, it's still a beautiful day here. We actually had the sun out, which in this part of the world in January is actually kind of rare. It seems like, we get into January, it seems like you can go weeks at a time, and then all you get are these slate gray skies. And so it's nice even if it's cold out, to have some sun. So I appreciated that. And I got some good stuff done here. I'm here recently as well. You ever have one of these things where, like, you build up a project in your own mind, it's going to be really hard, and you put it off, and you put it off, and then all of a sudden you find out, that really wasn't as hard as what I thought it was going to be. Well, I had that experience with these headphones I have on that I use for podcasting. I guess I bought these about 6 years ago, and they were kind of, somewhat high-end studio monitor headphones. They sound really great. And they still do, and I still really like them. But the ear pads on these things had deteriorated, and they were coming apart. And I'd do a podcast, and I'd get done with it, and then I'd go, and people would say, "What's that black stuff you got on your face?" And it was like all the rubber was flecking off, and it'd stick on my face, and all this kind of thing. And I ordered these new ear pads for the headphones. And I had them, sitting there for about a month. And I was like, I don't have the time to do it. It's going to be hard. Well, I finally got the things out of the package. And I watched a video. There's a little couple minute video that came with this thing. And I think between the time it took to watch the video and the time to pull off the old ear pads and replace them with these new ones, it took about 5 minutes. So it's one of those things that in life, it's really nice every now and then to find something that actually turns out to be easier than what you thought it was going to be, because it seems like just about everything is harder than what you think it's going to be. So I was thankful for that. And I actually got these nice little hooks that I was able to put under my desk here. Found these things. They actually connect to the bottom of the desk, and I can actually hang these headphones. So now I've got a place to put them. I'm making all kinds of progress here on my studio. So those were two nice happenings here over the past week or so. I get excited by small things. Hey, what can I say? But that was nice. And anyway, here's I guess maybe that's a lead in talking about getting excited about things. Well, it's, as I said, the title of this episode is It's Primary Season. We just had the Iowa caucuses this past week, this past Tuesday, and of course those were easily won quite handily by Donald Trump. And I think he won 98 out of 99 counties. And one of the things that was interesting about that As there was a Fox News report, and it says here, Trump narrowly denied clean sweep of Iowa's 99 counties by one vote. Now, this was from January the 16th. I don't know if that's been updated since then, but it says the one county that did not go for Trump was Johnson County, where former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley led Trump by one vote with 99% of the votes counted. That sounds a bit fishy to me. I saw that and I thought, well, I mean, was that an establishment rig job? So they could point to that and say, see, Nikki Haley won one state or one county. And, that'll give her some press and she can go on and hopefully they can build her up and she can have a closer finish in New Hampshire, which apparently she will have. I mean, she's going to probably do better in New Hampshire than what she did in Iowa. And then, of course, after that, it's South Carolina, which is her home state. Although she's trailing Trump in the poll in South Carolina as well. And Nikki Haley is awful. She is a thoroughgoing neocon. I think she seems to actually like Israel a lot more than she does the United States. She's really out of step with pretty much anything, that I think the Republican base supports. And of course, I would also say too, and I have to point this out, I don't think that any Christian should support a woman for president. I think that's a terrible idea. I don't, Nikki Haley's bad on her policies, but I would not support a woman for president. And I realize that's probably not a typical comment to say. That probably is the kind of thing that would get a lot of people upset. But I think that there are some good biblical reasons for saying that. Anyway, that's my opinion, and it's something that I feel that I need to say, because I don't want that to simply be a policy issue and say, oh, well, if you get somebody that you agreed with more in policy, well, then it'd be okay to support that, to support her. Well, no, I don't believe that it would be. But anyway, we've got the New Hampshire primary coming up. That's supposed to be this Tuesday. I think that's, the 23rd. And probably Trump is going to win that from what I can see here. So anyway, that should be interesting to see how that turns out. It's interesting to watch, too. It seems like the establishment is just absolutely just beside themselves over Donald Trump. And I think they're very much afraid that he could win again. And what I think is very interesting to see that someone, there's a lot of reasons to get frustrated about the United States and about the way things are going. And, especially as a Christian, I mean, you can look at this and you can say, well, things look pretty precarious. And honestly, they do. I mean, let's face it. But as Christians, we know that the Lord is sovereign. Even we go through all of these tremendous difficulties, these social, political, possibly economic, foreign policy issues, problems, dangers that we face as a nation. The Lord is sovereign. He is watching over this stuff. He brings it about for his own purposes and for the good of his people. And in that, we can take comfort, and we know that that whatever happens, these things redound to our good if we are in Christ Jesus. And, that's a tough, that's one thing, I know that, and I believe that, but sometimes it can be hard to apply that to my own situations, and it's something that I have to remember to do, and to be hopeful, and to be thankful for the good things that we have from the Lord's hand. And, we need to remember as Christians to pray for our nation. We're called to do that. We're called to pray for those who are in authority, that we may lead peaceful lives. We may be able to live lives that are pleasing to God. That we may be able to live lives that that we're able to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ. And that's been a wonderful opportunity, a wonderful tradition we've had here in the United States. And it's my prayer that's something that continues, regardless of what happens geopolitically, economically, what have you. I mean, ultimately, we don't put our hope in who's president. You know, even though we think some people might be better in that role than others, I think it does matter who's president. I mean, sometimes you listen to people say, well, you know, it doesn't matter who wins an election. Well, it definitely can matter who wins an election. I was talking to a friend of mine about this today, and I remember just kind of like a little slice of my own little part of the world, just to give you an example. Back in 2014, 2015, I work in retirement plan business. So I deal with retirement plan administration issues. And I have to do, continuing ed on a regular basis. And for those couple of years, 2014, 2015, all the continuing ed, it seemed like almost all of it, was about this thing, they call it the fiduciary rule. And basically, it was the government putting a lot more regulations on financial advisors and kind of interfering in their ability to advise their clients. And there were some people at the time who were saying that it would make it all but impossible for a small investor to have a financial advisor. What they were saying is if this fiduciary rule goes through, that, you know, unless you're a big money, you know, high rolling investor, somebody that's got a big portfolio already, you're going to get stuck with a robo advisor. In other words, you know, you might go on to a website, instead of being able to meet in person with a financial advisor, you'd go on and you'd go on a website and you'd answer some questions and the system would spit out a financial plan for you. And that's about the best you could do unless you were somebody that had big bucks, because advisors wouldn't want to be bothered with all the extra work that would go into being an advisor for a smaller person, or taking on the risk of running afoul of these new fiduciary requirements. So anyway, there was all this talk about this in 2014 and 2015. Well, 2016 came along, Donald Trump won, and 2017 came, and lo and behold, one of the first things that happened was they canceled that fiduciary, the whole program. They basically just wadded it up in a ball and threw it in the trash can. It was completely gone. And in my little world that I work, we had spent the 2 years prior to that just endlessly talking about this thing. And the Trump administration just got rid of it completely. So, I mean, it does matter who's president. And don't let somebody tell you that it doesn't matter. It does matter. And as Christians, you know, we should be praying for and seeking someone for president, someone who will uphold the laws of the Constitution, uphold the Constitution of the United States of America, and work for the American people, not against them. You know, one of the things that I've been so astonished at over the years is how much this particular administration, the Biden administration, or I call them the Biden regime, how much they hate the American people. It's absolutely stunning to me. And they don't even try to hide it. I mean, it's just almost out there right in your face. And, you know, if you don't agree with them on everything, well, you know, they're willing to call you all sorts of terrible names and intimate all sorts of things about you. And sometimes just tell you directly, you know, that you're a terrible person and call you all sorts of awful names. Even the president himself does this. And it's a really appalling thing to watch this go on. I have never seen a president express the disdain for large swaths of the population as our current president does. As I said, there's a lot of fear among those who are the, you know, sort of the deep stater establishment types of Donald Trump. I've never seen them more afraid of a guy than they are of Donald Trump. And in fact, there was a piece that was run back right at the end of November in the Washington Post. So, I mean, this isn't a major paper. It's the Washington Post, and it was written by this guy named Robert Kagan. And it's an opinion piece, and I'll just read the title of it. It's called "A Trump Dictatorship is Increasingly Inevitable. We Should Stop Pretending." And if you read through the piece, essentially what this Robert Kagan guy, and again, I think I may have mentioned him a couple of weeks back, maybe. But this Robert Kagan guy, you may not have heard of him, I mean, unless you follow politics very closely, but he's a very high-powered foreign policy guy, very establishment. And essentially what he writes in this particular piece in the Washington Post is he essentially calls for Trump to be whacked. He doesn't come out quite and say it that bluntly, but if you read the article, that is what he implies. And it's absolutely shocking to me that a paper like the Washington Post would run an article like that. Now, there are some people, and I think they're probably right, that think really they will tell you the Washington Post is basically a CIA front. And if that's the case, and I think it probably is, essentially the Washington Post, I mean, what you read in there is what the deep staters want. I mean, that is their view. That's their mouthpiece, and that's what they're thinking. So when you see an op-ed, and this is a long op-ed too, when you see something like that in the Washington Post, that tells you what people in very high places are thinking, and that is very concerning. You know, something else that, and again, I mentioned this a couple weeks ago. I think maybe it was a couple weeks ago, maybe it was last week. I don't know, but it has to do with Vivek Ramaswamy. After the Iowa caucuses, he finished fourth. He didn't do maybe as well as some people thought that he might. He dropped out, and now he's supporting Donald Trump. Well, Vivek Ramaswamy has very close Jesuit connections. He went to use a graduate of a school here in Cincinnati called St. Xavier High School. That's a very well-known Catholic high school here in Cincinnati. It is a Jesuit-run high school. But more than that, he actually sits on the board of Jesuit-run St. Xavier High School. So now Ramaswamy himself is not Catholic. I believe he's Hindu. But you know, he has these Jesuit connections. You know, and it concerns me that he is cozying up to Donald Trump the way he is. Now, there are some people that say, well, Donald Trump has Jesuit connections because he went to Fordham University, which is a Jesuit university in New York City. And that's true. He did go there. He did go there for a couple years. He did not graduate from there. He went to the university. I think he left there and went to the University of Pennsylvania. And in fact, he had some actually some kind of insulting comments to say about Fordham University. I think that it was back in 2016. Donald Trump did. And, you know, but some people have looked at it and they said, well, you know, Donald Trump is a Jesuit guy too. Well, you know, I've done some research into that. You know, if you go and you try to do some web searches on Donald Trump and the Jesuits, and the one thing that I have noticed is I really can't find any type of Jesuit connections to Donald Trump. Not other than his going to Fordham University for a couple of years. Now, a lot of these people, it's actually very easy to find Jesuit connections on them. Joe Biden, for instance, he goes to a Jesuit parish, attends a Jesuit Roman Catholic parish in Washington, D.C. He had Jesuits speak at his inauguration, a Jesuit priest, you know, these kinds of things. So he's very tightly tied into the Jesuits. Vivek Ramaswamy has some significant Jesuit connections, and now he seems to be connecting himself to the Trump campaign, and that concerns me. Now, I know there are a lot of people that are excited about Vivek Ramaswamy. I do not trust him, and that's the reason I do not trust him. He's a smart guy. I mean, he speaks very, very well. I mean, he's very adroit verbally, quick-minded, and he's a brilliant guy. There's no doubt about it. But he has very close Jesuit connections. And I think as Christians, I think we need to be aware of that and not be naive about what that means. Let's see, what else do we have here? Wanted to talk some. This is interesting. This was actually a story that I came across here just today, kind of almost by accident. There's a headline in publication. It's called the Christian Post. I'll just read the headline to you. It says this. It says, Feds urged banks to flag purchases of Bibles, mega transactions, House Committee says. And I'll read a little bit of the article here to you. It says, is quoting from the article, quote, "A U.S. House of Representatives Judiciary Subcommittee is seeking to question a former official in the U.S. Treasury's Financial Crimes Enforcement Office over revelations the agency urged financial institutions to flag customer transactions linked to phrases like, quote, MAGA and, quote, Trump, as well as purchases of religious texts. Representative Jim Jordan, Republican Ohio, chair of the House Subcommittee on the Weaponization of the Federal Government, sent a letter Wednesday to Noah Bischoff, a former director of an office in the Treasury Strategic Operations Division of Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. Requesting a transcribed interview with Bischoff, Jordan stated that the subcommittee obtained documents showing that following the U.S. Capitol riot on January 6, 2021, FinCEN distributed materials to financial institutions that, among other things, outlined the typologies of various persons of interest. He alleges the agency also provided financial institutions with suggested search terms and merchant category codes for identifying transactions on behalf of law enforcement. These materials included a document recommending the use of generic terms like Trump and MAGA to search Zelle payment messages, as well as a prior FinCEN analysis of lone actor homegrown violent extremism indicators, the letter reads. According to this analysis, FinCEN warned financial institutions of extremism indicators that include transportation charges such as bus tickets, rental cars, or plane tickets for travel to areas with no apparent purpose, or the purchase of books, including religious text, and subscriptions to other media containing extremist views. So, I mean, I guess, I don't know what, if you buy a Bible, I don't know, I guess the Treasury Department needs to sic their financial enforcement on you. That's kind of an amazing thing. And this is the article continues. This is a quote from Jim Jordan. He says, "We now know the federal government flagged terms like MAGA and Trump to financial institutions if Americans completed transactions using those terms," Jordan tweeted. What was also flagged? If you bought a religious text like a Bible or shopped at Bass Pro Shop. So, yeah, if you buy Bibles and Bass Pro Shop, I guess that gets you in a world of trouble with the Biden regime's Treasury Department. Or, yeah, it's an amazing thing. I mean, I never, you know, I mean, if you're a Christian, I mean, if you're like me, I mean, you know, you consider yourself a law-abiding citizen, you go to work, you try to do the right things, whether it's raising your family or you know, you pay your taxes, you try to obey the laws, you try to be a good citizen as we're called to be as Christians. And now all of a sudden, by doing these things, you've got this president, you've got this administration that says that somehow you're this extremist crazy person. And I mean, this is a change that I think is, to me, it's shocking. And I'm not sure necessarily that Christians in general really appreciate the amount of hostility that is that's out there in high places right now. And it's very troubling to see things like this. I'm thankful that, you know, we have a man like Jim Jordan who's at least willing to talk about some of this stuff and to expose some of this stuff. I'm thankful that we have that. But yeah, this is a real problem, and I don't think this is something that's going to just go away all on its own. So yeah, there's that's going on. Then we got another thing here. There's the whole immigration thing is still continuing. And I'm doing this podcast right now. I'm doing it as a live on Instagram. So if you want to watch this on Instagram, hey, you can do that on Instagram, on my Instagram feed. But you have to do it. If you're going to podcast, you got to do the video in portrait mode. And you know what I haven't tried to do is in portrait mode. I wonder if you can share. You know, I haven't actually tried that before. Let's take a look here and let's give it a shot here. I'm going to try to do a screen share. Oh yeah, you can do a screen share in this. I did the portrait mode a couple weeks ago and I thought, well, I don't know if you can even screen share or not. But yeah, I wanted to show a couple of videos here. This is one that I found. It's on an X feed called N Wokeness. And it's a video just showing all of these. It's about a 20-second video showing all of these illegal aliens pouring into the country. And these people apparently are Africans. So let me just play this here for you.
They let them through. Look at this.
America!
It's just an endless stream of them. If you're just listening to the podcast, I mean, it's just this giant stream of people just running past. There's a cameraman standing here just filming it, and there's the wall is on one side, and apparently, you know, they're here in the United States, and they're just running by. Yeah, it's an amazing thing. And then there's another video here. This one's a little bit longer, but it shows it. I don't know, several hundred. I don't know. Maybe it's a few thousand. I don't know how big this crowd is, but it looks gigantic. And this is actually put out by a guy called Jeff from Cali. It's an X feed that I just really became familiar with. Apparently, I guess Elon Musk even retweeted some of his stuff. But this fellow, this Jeff from Cali, he went down to the border in Arizona. I guess he says he spent 7 weeks there filming video. And I mean, you look at this video that I've got playing right now, and it's crazy. I mean, it does. I would say thousands of people standing here. And let me read a little bit of what he says. He says, this is a quote from the tweet itself. It says, "From my time on the border near Lukeville, Arizona, the port of entry closed because so many illegal aliens were there, mostly male illegal aliens from the African countries of Senegal and Guinea, which are majority Islamic. Tensions were very high because people tried to cut in line to get on transport vehicles first. I see that all the time. There are so many illegal aliens, many had to sleep here 3 days. There's not enough Border Patrol, and the Biden administration refused to call in the National Guard to help. Watch to the end and follow me on my other social media accounts listed there." And he, I don't know, what is he, what's it show there at the end? I'll take a look here. He's on Twitter and Telegram and I don't know what else here, but I guess it looks like he's on most of the big platforms. So if you want to follow a feed that has some good reporting by a citizen journalist, I would say look at the stuff from Jeff from Cali. I think he's done some interesting work there. So what else did I find this week on the immigration front? Oh, this is a post here. This is one from Bill Malugin. And one of the things that I have tried to do in my coverage of the immigration crisis that has been foisted on our country by the Biden administration is to really bring out the angle that of the work that the Roman Catholic Church is doing more than any other institution. You know, the Roman Catholic Church is fostering this border crisis. They cannot do enough to encourage the current situation on our southern border. And this is a report here. This is Bill Malugin of Fox News. And now he's got some video rolling if you're watching the video of this. But I'll also read the tweet here. And this is what Bill Malugin said. "We continue to witness mass releases of migrants caught crossing border illegally despite DHS pledges of tougher consequences post-Title 42. This was at Catholic Charities in McAllen, where migrants receive help to travel all across the U.S., some with court dates years away. Border Patrol sources tell us busloads of these releases happen multiple times daily here in the RGV. RGV is Rio Grande Valley. And that migrant families have little to no fear of removal, expecting to be released when they turn themselves into agents." And again, you know, the video shows them going to Catholic Charities, you know, this great big group of illegal aliens. There's another video that I saw this past week, and I thought this was actually pretty interesting here. It was put out by a gentleman by the name of James O'Keefe. You might be familiar with some of his work. He used to have Project Veritas, and he would do some undercover videos. And now he recently, within the last week or so, he was down in Arizona doing some investigative reporting on the situation on the border. And it was interesting. He was in Tucson, Arizona, and he was looking at these this organization or a couple of organizations that were involved in busing migrants in. I guess this was a facility where they stayed for a short period of time, and then they would bus these migrants out to the airport. I guess maybe it was the Phoenix airport or other airports, and then they put them on these planes. Maybe you saw some stories back around Christmas where there were people in these airports, and there were these huge lines of illegal aliens that were being boarded on airplanes and flown points hither and yon. And apparently this organization in Tucson, and there were two of them that he identified. One of them was called, Casa Elitis, and the other was called, Elitis Angels, I believe it was. And I'm going to play this is about a 10-minute video. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I just wanted to play a little bit of it. And this is James O'Keefe, and he's actually talking on the phone with somebody from this group called Casa Elitis. I'm just going to play maybe about 15 or 20 seconds of this. And listen closely, and I'll comment on it at the end.
Identity as having worked with Casa Elitis.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, it looks like the video's. Oh, come on. The video's not being very cooperative.
You've got the wrong person, so no, I don't. You can call CCS or whoever you need to talk to.
You sound pretty knowledgeable about the subject for someone who has nothing to do with it. Elitis.
I don't know if you caught that there. I'm going to see if I can rerun that here. Let's see, where was that? There's something he says. And this guy that James O'Keefe's talking to, he says it very quickly.
CCS or whoever
you. Yeah, he says, you can call CCS. So what's CCS? Well, it turns out CCS is Catholic Community Services. Catholic Community Services. And if you go to the Catholic Community Services website, and again, maybe you can see this. Let's see if I can move my little inset picture around. That's not working too well. Oh, goodness. That's frustrating. Well, there's a logo that this Catholic Community Services has that says Catholic Community Services of Southern Arizona Inc. Casa Elitis Program. So Catholic Community Services of Southern Arizona is involved with this Casa Elitis Program, which apparently is also involved with essentially smuggling illegal aliens into the country, getting them into airports, and flying them all around the country. And this is what the Roman Catholic Church does. And you know what's interesting is, I mean, you go out sometimes to the there's an X feed out there. It's called Justice for Immigrants, and it's run by the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. And they have all these things on there. Oh, we're opposed to human trafficking. Oh, we're opposed to all this stuff. Well, it's the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is the Roman Catholic Church. It's the Catholic Charities of the Rio Grande Valley. It's organizations like Catholic Community Services that are encouraging human trafficking. You know, all of this terrible stuff that you read about that goes on the border is encouraged and supported by the work of the Roman Catholic Church. And what was interesting, you know, when I started watching that video by James O'Keefe, I wasn't even watching it to see if there was a Catholic connection. But sure enough, bam, right at the end of that video, this thing on Catholic Community Services pops up. Even if you're not looking for it, you find it. But you have to have eyes to see. You have to understand what you're dealing with when you're dealing with the Roman Catholic Church. You're dealing essentially with, you're dealing with Antichrist. I mean, this is historically the Protestant understanding of the identity of Antichrist is it is the office of the papacy. You know, the Roman Catholic Church is an organization headed by Antichrist. So yeah, I would expect Rome to do destructive things. Rome is the premier globalist organization in the world. It is the oldest. It is the biggest. It is the most powerful globalist organization there is. When you talk about globalism, you have to talk about Rome. You have to talk about Antichrist. The Roman Catholic Church has been flagrantly open for a long time about their hatred for independent nations and their love of world government. They love world government. And they said this many, many times. In official statements by high Roman Catholic Church officials, including popes. in papal encyclicals and other types of documents. They absolutely love world government. They're totally down with world government. And this is something, as Christians, we have to be aware of. You know, churches need to teach this stuff, but they don't. And I guess that's why I jump up and down and act like a lunatic. Sometimes I've have people say, well, you go on and on and on and on about this stuff. Well, you know, I guess I have to, because it doesn't seem like many other people are interested in talking about this, but we have to talk about it. And maybe it can be uncomfortable to talk about it. But it's something that does need to be talked about. And I would be remiss as a Christian if I didn't talk about it. So moving on from immigration here, this was a story, this was interesting here. This is a headline from People magazine. It says, U.S. Air Force officer Madison Marsh crowned as 2024 Miss America. The sky is not the limit. The 22-year-old second lieutenant is the first active duty Air Force officer to win the title. And if you scroll down through here, it's got a picture of her here. She's in, I guess, a cockpit of a jet. I think they saw some video of her, I guess, flying what looks like a jet fighter of some sort, maybe an F-16. I don't know for sure. It looked a little bit like an F-16, but you couldn't get a real good look at it. And here's the point that I thought would be worth making here. You know, there's been a lot of outcry in over the last year or so with, you know, men competing in women's sports. And there are people who have made a big push to say, you know, men should not be competing in women's sports. And you know what? Actually, I agree with that. Men should not be competing in women's sports. You should not have these so-called trans women who are not women. They're not women competing in women's sports. And for instance, the one person who's done a lot with that has been Riley Gaines. She has gone on, given a lot of talks on that, has opposed some of this transgender sports stuff. She even had some harsh comments for our governor here in Ohio when he vetoed a bill that would have prohibited men from competing in women's sports. And, you know, and people say, well, you know, men shouldn't be invading women's spaces. You know, and again, I agree with that. You know, I don't think women should have to compete against biological men in sports, whether it's swimming or in other things. But here's the thing I think that's interesting. I think this is at least a question worth asking. Why is it considered okay for women to invade men's spaces? You know, if it's wrong for women to men to invade women's spaces, why is it empowering and wonderful when women invade men's spaces? You know, nobody ever, you know, certainly conservatives don't seem bothered by it. In fact, they're quite willing to go out there and say, oh, well, this is empowerment and this is wonderful. But, you know, why do we have women flying fighter jets? Why do we have women in frontline combat units? Why are we doing this stuff? You know, the Bible has a prohibition against men donning women's clothing and vice versa. There were no women in the army in Scripture in ancient Israel. And I think just about any sane society that's existed in history prohibits that. You know, and yet this is something we encourage and we say, oh, well, this is empowering. I think it's barbaric and awful. And you know, this goes to a broader issue. I mean, men's spaces, there hardly are any men's spaces anymore. They don't exist, except in very few spots. That's considered progressive. But yet, I mean, when you have men invading women's spaces, then, you know, it's a terrible thing. And what I would encourage people to do is maybe we need to rethink this whole thing. I think we do need to rethink it. But this is a problem. I think it's a major problem. So anyway, that was just a quick comment on that. And along these same lines, I mean, you know, you've got Miss America now, I guess, is going to be Chuck Yeager. I guess if you believe the press anyway. This is an opinion piece. This is from The Telegraph, which is a British paper. This is actually reprinted on Yahoo News, but it has a headline, "White Men No Longer Want to Fight for a Nation That Scorns Them." And you read through here, and it says, "Let me begin by making this point as clear as possible. There's absolutely nothing worse for combat effectiveness of a military than attempting to use recruiting as a social engineering program." Well, the U.S. military has been doing this for a number of years now. And I think it was the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. Essentially, they put a hold on the promotion of white men in the military. I mean, they've literally done this, and they said, we're not going to promote white men. And so now they're not signing up for the military. You know, imagine that. Yeah. You know, and the military is missing its recruiting goals. Now, you know, there are some people maybe that think that that's a ploy to, you know, drive the white guys out of the military and replace them with foreigners. I mean, there are some people, I think Dick Durbin, Senator Richard Durbin from Illinois, I think it was, I'm going by memory now, but there are people that have talked about rewarding illegal aliens if they join the military with citizenship. You know, that's a pathway to citizenship. Why? Because, well, I mean, Americans, they do the jobs Americans won't do. Well, the reason Americans don't do the job is because the Secretary of Defense and other high-ranking officers have basically made it impossible for them to have anything like a career, have openly expressed their disdain and hatred for them. And so then they don't join up. Well, you know, it's... Yeah, it's a terrible thing. I mean, there's absolutely, I'm reading here, quoting this article again here. There's absolutely nothing worse for combat effectiveness of a military than attempting to use recruiting as a social engineering program, which is exactly what's going on. The article continues here. It was reported in this newspaper recently how the U.S. Army has seen a dramatic fall in the number of white recruits, as the military.com website found that the Army fell 10,000 short of its 65,000 enlistment target. I saw an article today, another article, they were saying right now we have the smallest military in 80 years. And this is at a time when the Biden regime seems to be ramping up war. I saw an article just this evening where it was talking about how they're talking about expanding the attacks on the Houthis in Yemen because the bombardment that they've been doing hasn't worked so far. You know, so you've got that whole thing. You still got Ukraine going on. You've got the situation with Israel and Gaza. You've got the related, that whole thing with the Houthis in Yemen is related to the war in Israel that our government continues to encourage. And then they're also talking about, you know, there's this constant chatter about China. So, I mean, I guess we're fighting a proxy war against Russia and Ukraine. We got a war going in the Middle East. There's talk about war with China. And we've got the smallest military we've had in 80 years. And what we do have is chock full of wokesters. You know, it's run by a bunch of wokesters who hate white guys. And, you know, this is not going to end well if things continue this way. So, let's see if there's anything else I have here. I can't forget about this. Yes, our friends at the World Economic Forum. How could I forget? Yes. If you follow any of this sort of stuff, you know, the World Economic Forum, he's headed up by that sort of Bond villain guy. What's his name? Klaus Schwab. You know, he's the one that likes to go around and say, "You will eat the bugs." If you see this guy, I have to say, Klaus Schwab, part of me wants to laugh when I see him. I mean, it's actually not funny, but it kind of is in a way because he does. He's like Dr. Evil out of like one of those Austin Power movies. You know, I kind of have almost expect him to say $1 million or something like this. He's one of these weird, you know, kind of rule the world, megalomaniacal people that runs this... This World Economic Forum, and every January they get together at Davos, Switzerland. It's kind of like a confab of all the Bond villains, and they all get together and cackle how they're going to rule the world. And the headline here, this is from the AP. It's an article I'm looking at. It says, at Davos, leaders talked big on rebuilding trust. Can the World Economic Forum make a difference? So that was the theme of the Davos meeting. The Davos had actually ran this past week. I think it ended on Friday the 19th, yesterday. But yeah, rebuilding trust. Well, you know, I don't know. If you read through here, let's see, what does it say? Business and political elites descended on the Swiss Alpine snows of Davos to suss out rebuilding trust in a splintering world. If there's any takeaway from the World Economic Forum's annual meeting, boldly touting that theme, it's that we still have a long way to go. Well, I wonder why we have a long way to go. Could it be because of all the fantastic lies that have been told by business and governmental leaders and that over the past, I don't know, how many years? You know, you go back however long you want to go back. I mean, certainly the whole scamdemic thing and everything related to it is one of the biggest bunch of it's complete nonsense. It's just nothing but an endless stream of lies. The whole global warming thing, climate change, whatever it is I happen to be calling it this week, it is an extraordinary deception. It is a lie to seize our money and take our freedoms, our liberties, and to empower them. Essentially, I mean, these are the people that go to the World Economic Forum. They are sometimes what are called neo-feudalists. And I think that's actually a pretty good word for them. You know, remember the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages, where you had the Roman Catholic Church ruled Europe, and there were a few very wealthy people, you know, these barons and kings and lords of one sort or another. There are very few people that had lots of money and lots of power, and then there were the peasants who had virtually nothing. I think the average lifespan in Europe during the Middle Ages under the original feudal system was like 30 years or something like that. There was an English philosopher, was it Thomas Hobbes? He famously described life as solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. And I think that's probably a pretty apt description of life in the Middle Ages. And I do think that these people in Davos want to bring that sort of thing back again. You know, this Klaus Schwab, this World Economic Forum, they're the same ones that have said, you know, that by 2030 you will own nothing and be happy. Oh, and eat the bugs. Can't forget, you got to eat the bugs. That's the World Economic Forum for you. But yeah, these people, they're the ones that are going to rebuild trust. Yeah. Well, you know, you just keep an eye on the World Economic Forum. You know, that's something you can look up yourself. If you're interested, you can find out more about that. But yeah, they are globalists. The Roman Catholic Church is deeply involved with the World Economic Forum. Surprise, surprise. The Pope thinks it's pretty awesome, which I'm sure that he would. I would expect him to. So anyway, I guess that's really about all for this week. What have we got? Yeah, it's about 45 minutes or so. And, you know, it's getting kind of late and I want to get this thing wrapped up and posted. So thanks very much for listening. It's been great to have you. I really appreciate that. And I look forward to speaking to you again, Lord willing, next week. Wish you a blessed Lord's Day tomorrow. And until then, may the Spirit of Truth guide you in all truth as you read and study God's Word.